we go. Jake and Josh are here to analyze the game they love for the team they love. This is another Dolphins Podcast. Here's your host, Jake Mendel and Josh Houts.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of another Dolphins Podcast. I wanted to start today's show by saying I hope everyone in Florida is staying safe through all the nasty weather. Storms, tornadoes. The videos and photos coming out of Florida have been pretty crazy. So I just thought it was important to start the show by saying we're thinking of y'all and we hope everyone is safe and dry. Now, to kind of switch things up a little bit, talk about the Miami Dolphins, we have a lot to get into on today's show. Coach Eric Smith of Five Reasons Sports shares his grades for the Miami Dolphins offensive line at the quarter mark of the 2024 season. But before that, Joshua Houts and I wanted to talk a bit about a position group that the team threw a bunch of resources at. But man, it's looking like a pretty weak position group. Joshua Houts, over the offseason, we saw Christian Wilkins sign a monster contract with the Las Vegas Raiders. And we were pretty confident that that defensive line, the interior defensive tackles, was going to be Miami's biggest issue. But through 5 weeks, that really hasn't been the case.
No, not at all. And Jake, I'm glad you opened with that great intro. Like you said, our thoughts and prayers are out with everyone down there in South Florida, but and everyone affected by the storms. But yeah, man, I mean, we came into this season thinking that, you know, we were going to have a huge hole in the middle of that defense. And that's not to say that these teams are not finding ways to run the ball effectively, but we have not had an issue with Zach Sealer and Calais Campbell up front. Even Emmanuel Agba, I mean, he's absolutely playing very well. I think Sealer, Campbell, and Agba both have 2 sacks, so that's where a lot of these pressures are coming from. So that's what we want to talk about. You know, we sat here, we let Christian Wilkins go. We all saw that he's out indefinitely. I guess he could come back later in the year, so we're thinking about Christian Wilkins. But the defensive line, the biggest issue to me is that edge position. I want to talk about a little bit of that. So how have you been doing? Because later in the pod, you said you talked to Eric Smith, and his grading system is just out of this world.
I'm good. I gotta reel it back in a little bit, Josh, because this week I think I've gone a little too deep of like, all right, I think this team can really figure things out. I think there is a real important note here that there are some pure weaknesses on this football team, and I think one of them is that edge rusher position. Because just think about how the last, God, man, I don't know, 12 months has gone. You could even go back to 2022. You trade for Bradley Chubb on top of having Jalen Phillips. That's 2 first-round picks right there on the defensive line. You thought that those two guys would play a huge role this year. We already lost Jalen Phillips for the year with an ACL injury. Bradley Chubb, he's still working back from his torn ACL that he suffered in, what, Josh, week 16, 17 last year. So it's no surprise that he's going to need a little more time to come back. But then, Josh, behind those two, Miami invested another first-round pick in the form of Chop Robinson to add to that pass rush group. They also signed Shaq Barrett in free agency just for some added depth. We thought this unit would be looking pretty strong, but man, Shaq Barrett, he decides to retire about a week before training camp begins. I mentioned the Phillips injury, and all of a sudden, this Miami Dolphins defense ranks number 26 in the league with an average of 1.8 sacks per game. And dude, it's been awesome watching Calais Campbell be an absolute stud. It seems like through 4 games, he's really done a good job of replacing Christian Wilkins. But at the same time, this guy is 38 years old. He's been awesome to watch, but we got to figure some other things out, man, because I don't know if we can trust that for 17 games, even though, I mean, he's going to go into the Hall of Fame just by the standard of 17 games of awesomeness. But I mean, you can't really expect that at 37.
I mean, he's an anomaly. So we're sitting here, and I mean, at times where I know Chris Greer gets some praise, I guess, maybe for bringing in a Calais Campbell. I don't think that you should get praised for, you know, having to rely on that's a break in case of emergency, hoping that, you know, Campbell can replicate what he's been doing. And I mean, he is. He's right next to Zach, so you're not really missing a beat. But the biggest, you know, elephant in the room, and I think the biggest name that everyone's kind of, you know, down on is Chop Robinson. And I had to look it up, Jake, because he has 7 tackles, 5 stops through the first 5 games of the season. And Jalen Phillips had 9 tackles. 2 of those were sacks through the first 5 games of the season. And only 2 of those sacks came against the Giants in week 5. So similar player. I know a lot of people, you know, we came into the year thinking that Chop Robinson was going to be this pass rush specialist. What we've seen so far is it's almost like they're throwing him out there trial by fire, combat by fire, like we like to say, Jake, because you know he isn't that great against the run, but they're setting him out there in run situations, hoping he can hold up, contain the edge. And as of right now, he's just not, you know, strong enough and just not ready to be doing that. Similar to what Jalen Phillips was. So I see him getting a lot of hate. I know that, you know, you can be upset with Chris Greer for not addressing the offensive line or a more immediate need. But I think long term, you got to remember that this guy was a project. And right now they're asking him to do things that isn't really necessarily in his alley. So I'm hoping that we see Chop Robinson truly evolve over these next few weeks with Jalen Phillips out, like you mentioned, Bradley Chubb on the back end. I guess that's a long-winded way of saying he's starting to show some things. I think he had 5 quarterback pressures last week, had a nice one on 3rd down against the Patriots. So he is getting there. He's just not converting the sacks. And again, it's a very similar to Jalen Phillips. So give Chop Robinson a little bit of time. He's just a young, young player at this stage.
And that's kind of something we've been preaching throughout the offseason, was the idea that Chop Robinson, he's going to take some time that for – he's kind of what the double-edged sword at this point in his career, where he's going to have that first quick step. He's going to have some opportunities to almost block a punt, get really close to getting a sack. But at the other end, you know, you see scenarios where he gets just absolutely washed out against the running game or something like that. I see a lot of people saying, like, we just need to rush him up the A gap more. We just got to rush him up the B gap more. And I agree with that. I think Chop Robinson's first step is truly what makes him special. And when you have a young player early in his career, you want to lean into what makes them special, because if you have them going out and trying to do everything that they're not, you just see struggles, you see inefficiencies on the defense as a whole. But Josh, I do have a little bit of a fear that, like, if we know that Chop Robinson is at his best in the A gap and B gap, and the Dolphins know that, I'd assume that there are 31 other teams in the NFL that also know that. So I'm kind of wondering here that, I mean, Anthony Weaver, it's the second time being a defensive coordinator. I do wonder if the Chop Robinson, like, change up is going to be coming, because it's not something where you can have him lining up in the A and B gap, you know, 17 straight weeks and be like, yeah, man, this is going to work. Like, this is how he's going to get things done. You wonder if it's a pitch that Anthony Weaver has in his back pocket for maybe a couple weeks down the road, maybe in some late game situations. And at the same time, you're getting this film out there where, you know, Robinson has struggled. And you're right, man, that's to be expected. Very raw coming out of college, where it's going to take a little time.
Yeah, and I think, again, what made him so exciting coming out was, you know, his versatility, like you mentioned, being able to move him inside. I think I looked it up. He only had 3 snaps inside so far this year. So, you know, as cliche as it sounds, maybe this is just Mike McDaniel and, you know, Anthony Weaver saying we need to get this rookie adapted to the fundamentals, you know, the basic part of that game. And then when later in the year, when we want to open things up, maybe we'll give him more on his platter. But again, that was your thought process probably coming into the year. I mean, I know a lot of us were pretty high on Quentin Bell, who I had to look up if he was even still healthy. Five tackles. He hasn't had a quarterback pressure yet. I think he had 1 snap all of last week. So he's getting about 15 snaps per game. But that was a guy who we thought could maybe, you know, based on all the hype we heard throughout the preseason, we thought he might be able to come in there and fill a void. So you're hoping he steps up. But I really do think Chop Robinson over these next few weeks will really hopefully take his game to the next level. Jake, I wanted to ask you, Mo Kamara, he was another guy who maybe us as Dolphin fans were hyping up because late round guy, you know, we heard the chip on his shoulder and things like that. So far, we really haven't seen him out there making an impact. But again, maybe it's to be expected. But right now, you're at the bye. You need to figure out a way to get those edge, that edge position set. What are your thoughts on Mo Kamara and maybe him taking the next step over the next few weeks?
That was one of the things where, what'd we say, Josh? We thought that Kamara might have a few more sacks his rookie year. He's much more of a violent player, an aggressive player, where Robinson, where you rewatch the film and you see the pressure rate and you really understand the progression here of why he was a first-round pick, you'd kind of understand why Kamara would have that step ahead. But at the same time, man, this is a 5th-round rookie. This is a situation where it's not as simple as just kind of going and plugging someone in. We saw scenarios last week, or I think it was even against the Titans game, where Robinson would be lining up on the edge and you had offensive linemen kind of pointing in that direction of, hey, let's run this way. Let's go at these type of guys. So you do wonder the risk reward here of maybe Robinson can, or Kamara can go in there and get a couple sacks. But at the same time, is he going to get beaten on 3 straight plays where, you know, you can turn a 2nd and 26 or, I mean, wow, that'd be a crazy sack, but like a 2nd and 18 still converted just by like running at them, just the next play. Those are things that I'm interested to see. Those are things we don't necessarily know. You mentioned the guys leading the team in sacks, Josh. Zach Sealer, Clias Campbell, Emmanuel Ogba each have 2 apiece. Jalen Brooks, Jalen Phillips, and Deshaun Hand each have 1. That's it for the Miami Dolphins in sacks so far this year. Is there anything that really sticks out there or surprises you?
I mean, I guess it seems like they're going back to maybe more of these I don't know. I guess it is not getting a lot of that production out of the edge position. But again, it's not so much, you know, Jalen Phillips is banged up. We see Chop Robinson, Youngin. To me, Emmanuel Ogba really stepping up. I mean, that just like Calais Campbell, those two guys almost seem like the Dolphins lucked into those guys. So thankfully that Emmanuel Ogba's around. But I think that we need to see a lot more of those guys on the edge. But, you know, however we get there, however we, you know, convert these things, I really don't care. But we're stoked, man. And what about Cameron Good? He's another guy that I keep forgetting that he's also on injury reserve or PUP or whatever it is. I always get him confused, but
he suffered a pretty harsh foot injury, if I remember correctly. He might be out a little longer than Bradley Chubb even. The Dolphins are in a very unique spot, Josh, as we approach the second quarter of the season, give or take. Who do you see stepping up as that edge rusher? I mean, Emmanuel Ogba, yes, he's kind of a defensive end, but I like to label him more of a defensive tackle. When you think about those guys true on the edge, I only see Jalen Phillips having a single sack. So to go through the list here, Chop Robinson's listed as a starter, Tyus Bowser, Quinton Bell, Mo Cabrera, and I'll throw Bradley Chubb in the mix. I don't know if he's going to be back. Out of those guys, who do you think can really step up and generate a couple sacks here in the second quarter of the year?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do think that I personally forget the Chubb, how good he was. 45 tackles, 11 sacks, 6 forced fumbles. So I think, you know, when we get him back, we'll feel pretty good about that position. But yeah, so for, I mean, I don't want to go with the cliche chopper. I'm going to say Tyus Bowser. I mean, we know he has familiarity with this system. It's so cliche to say. Already see him. It looks like this is an ESPN depth chart, so I don't know how far, if it's true that he's above a Muhammad Kamara, but I wouldn't be surprised. So the more he gets into this defense, gets his footing, I could see him getting having a bigger impact. But again, I got to tip my hat to Emmanuel Ogba because he's really been, I guess, doing more than I expected. Maybe I should have had higher expectations.
And that's kind of the craziness of the NFL season. Like, we can even argue, Josh, that maybe Chop Robinson shouldn't have gone where he went, that the Dolphins kind of panicked. It was the end of the rush of edge rushers. I think three of the four picks before them were all edge rushers. You can kind of wonder, hey, did Greer panic here? But there was a sound thought process here because you thought Shaq Barrett would be in the mix. You thought that you'd have Jalen Phillips, and just football's a physical sport. It's tough. It's very, very hard sometimes. Josh, the Dolphins' top 6 pass rushing grades according to PFF. I want you to tell me what they all have in common, all right? Calais Campbell is number 1 at 82. Jordan Brooks, number 2 at 73. Zach Sealer, 3rd at 70. Benito Jones at 70. Brandon Peely at 68. And Deshaun Hand at 66.
I don't know. What's...
Not a single one of them is an edge rusher. They're all defensive line. Well, you got Jordan Brooks being a linebacker in there, but that's crazy to me. The Dolphins have really struggled to generate pressure on the edge, and this is going from a team that has failed to lead during games so far this season. So I look at the second quarter of the season, man. Number 7 on the list is Chop Robinson. You do wonder if he has that extra little gear where being still so young, being a rookie season, if he can start converting those in year one. It's going to be tough, but I really like you bringing up someone like Tyus Bowser, 29 years old. He's a little bit on the older side. Just some bad injury luck the last couple of years, but I really like reuniting him with Anthony Weaver to see if he can make some noise where you do have some good pressure coming from the interior. Josh, I bring up all these names and how Miami's so desperate for pressure off the edge, just some playmaking plays. What if I told you that Andrew Van Ginkle, his 3 sacks would lead the Dolphins? Andrew Van Ginkle, his 2 interceptions would also lead the Dolphins. I mean, it's just still so crazy to me that the Dolphins try to do so many different things, bending over backward this offseason. When you had the guy right here, just the diverse playmaker who's just awesome to root for game after game. I mean, if you're looking at one issue that could really change the entire offseason, it's we're not going to pay Andrew Van Ginkle that extra $2 million and try to get Shaq Barrett instead.
Did we pause it when I was sitting there doing my Dory Brain thing? Because that's exactly what I had wanted to talk about was Andrew Van Ginkle, because that is why I think a lot of us are down. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so I think that's a lot of the reason why everyone's expecting Chop Robinson to really step up. I mean, we as fans, everyone, you know, collectively would have said, sign Andrew Van Ginkle, bring him back, especially for that contract he got. And when you see him every week making a play, I mean, you hear people saying, could he be in the running for defensive MVP? I mean, it's absolutely absurd what he's doing. And again, when you needed that help at the position, when you knew you weren't going to have Jalen Phillips, I mean, he came back sooner than expected, so that's cool. But you knew you weren't going to have him most likely early on. Bradley Chubb as well. I mean, it made no sense to let Andrew Van Ginkle walk. It goes back to just why Chris Greer, when he has these good players that he drafts, they don't want to give him a second contract. But like we said before, Jake, they'll have no problem trading away assets and then giving the bag to some of these other guys. So I don't know what that was a long-winded way of saying, but yeah, fix your shit, Chris Greer. I guess that was my long-winded way of saying that. But I think Chop Robinson, again, is going to step up. And I think a lot of people, you know, take a little bit of that heat off Chris Greer. But I think we'll eventually have that Chris Greer, Mike McDaniel discussion that we had in our comments on YouTube.
I agree with you. Some final thoughts here. Christian Wilkins, he's going to be sidelined for quite a bit with an injury. There was a feud going on around Twitter. Will it impact Miami's compensatory picks? No, it will not. Christian Wilkins got paid way too much. Robert Hunt, he's a better example. He even got paid too. He made over $100 million. I mean, insane money. Good for him. But he's somebody, if he was to miss time, I think he can drop from a third to a fourth round pick just based on the contract and all those other factors. Where Christian Wilkins, I think we're all set there with the third. I think Robert Hunt, we were even a little surprised when it came out that he was a third. We were kind of aiming for that fourth round territory. And Andrew Van Ginkel, if he keeps playing this way right now, sorry, I'm jumping a bunch. Miami right now has two thirds, one for Wilkins, one for Hunt. And then they have a seventh round pick for, I think, Brandon Jones. I'm probably wrong about that, but they're getting a seventh round pick from someone. No, Josh, who was the other?
Deshaun Elliott.
Thank you. So Andrew Van Ginkel is part of that, and I think he gets crossed out with someone like Jordan Brooks. If Andrew Van Ginkel continues playing with his hair on like this top tier level for the rest of the year, logs a bunch of snaps at edge rusher, there's a chance his comp pick formula could be boosted a little bit. But that's pretty much all I have on that. Just we don't have to panic too much about Wilkins. Let's hope Robert Hunt continues to be awesome. That way the Dolphins will get the third round compensatory pick there as well. Josh, Dynasty League, one final question here. I'm 4-1. I'm right there. I know I can
rub it in,
have a good shot this year. I came in second place last year in this league. Davante Adams for a first round pick, would you do it?
You're trading it away. You're getting him, right?
I'm trading. This is like a bold, like risky, like chips to the center. I have Cooper Kupp. He's on injured reserve. I have Jalen Waddle bye week. This is like a long-term play where I'm looking like, in theory, you're hoping that Davante Adams for at least the end of this year, maybe next year, is on like a playoff contender, still just being Davante Adams. But there's that little fear in the back of my head that maybe he doesn't play this year.
Yeah.
Who knows?
The first thing I always say is, did you try a second first? I would throw a second and see if they take that. But yeah, I mean, I could see
two twos.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, there's probably a reason you asked about a first. I mean, it's definitely risky, but it's Davante Adams. I mean, before the year, what people probably had him as like wide receiver one almost. Well, Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill's up there, but you know what I mean? He's up there. So go for it, man. And you already say you're 4-1. So that first is going to, I mean, you can look at it as almost a late round second. So
I feel you. Why not, yeah, man? I think I'm going to do it, but I wanted to get your thoughts. All right. That is it for us. I'm going to kick things over to me and Eric, who's going to talk more about the offensive line. If you don't hear from us again, have a wonderful weekend. And most importantly, fins up.
Fins up.
Joining me now on another Dolphins podcast is Eric Smith, a contributor for 5 Reasons Sports, who posts some pretty awesome weekly offensive line grades for the Miami Dolphins each week. Be sure to give him a follow at OLCoachSmith63 on YouTube, on Twitter, on X, whatever you want to call it. Coach, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Of course. I've been listening to you and Josh for years now. Always enjoyed your show, so I was excited when you messaged and asked me to join.
It started with Vine, I think, where some people really started to dig in and look at offensive line play because it happens so quickly and then a play is over or the ball gets thrown. And if you're watching a broadcast, that's it. Everybody stops focusing on the offensive line. But for you personally, how long have you really locked in and the offensive line really been your bread and butter?
I mean, I was an offensive lineman coming all the way up through youth and high school football. I got into coaching right after I got out of high school. And, you know, even then, I have been an offensive coordinator a few times along the way, you know, coached some defensive line as well. But it's always been offensive line for me. Offensive line's always been what I really love to do. And then, you know, obviously that translated into, you know, my love for the Dolphins as well and watching those games and eventually started, you know, when all 22 came more popular and the ability to rewatch games, you know, it was just something I started spending my extra time doing was checking that out.
Do you remember what the first season was when you started really charting the team? And with that, who was the first player like, oh my God, why am I wasting my time charting this disaster?
No, I mean, I guess I kind of remember back to maybe 2010-ish would have been when I really first started looking at it. And when I first started looking at stuff from a play-by-play basis, it was more of, you know, when you watch a game, you kind of get caught up in the game flow. And by the time you get to the end of the game, you know, you kind of wonder how you got there sometimes. And, you know, so I started going back and I started making notes as to, you know, along the way, just some of the different plays throughout the game that I felt impacted the game, and just start kind of seeing, you know, what players had more of those, what players had less. And then that's kind of evolved into what I'm doing now with, you know, taking every, every snap for the offensive line and giving them a grade of 0, half a point, or 1. And then, you know, coming up with a calculation to try to, you know, make that make sense when I'm sharing that information. You know, it's kind of evolved into just the offensive line just because, you know, it is more of a pastime for me. So, you know, it's easier to, for the most part, unfortunately not always with the Dolphins, to have the same 5 offensive linemen out there every time and be grading those players versus trying to track everybody who's coming on and off the field and where they're lining up. But that's kind of where it has kind of honed into just the offensive line with the stuff that I do.
God, you say that. I think what they've had the same offensive line. You said it in your most recent review twice this year and last year, man. There were streaks where I think they were lucky to go 2 straight games with having the same offensive line. And continuity is so, so important for that group. And I feel like that's something we totally do not talk enough about. These aren't really the best benchmarks I have, but the Dolphins currently rank 23rd, allowing about 3.2 sacks per game. They're also 16th in the league, averaging 116 rushing yards per game. Obviously, when you go for 200-ish yards against the Patriots, that's going to balloon things. You had a great quote where you said on a recent show that things are generally never as good or bad as they look during the game broadcast. We've had 5 weeks to kind of digest this offensive line, and everybody shares the clip of Chris Greer kind of chuckling, you know, you guys care more about the offensive line than us. It's very easy to react about one play, as you mentioned, but what's your general feel about the offensive line and where it's trending?
I think they've been solid so far. You know, Kyle Krabs had a nice quote as well, talking about how when you are looking at the offensive line, what you've seen through 5 weeks, that you're kind of going to have, you know, 2 guys that play really well, 2 guys that play okay, and then 1 guy that you probably say, you know, probably feels like they could have played better. And that's kind of been the trend through the first 5 weeks. And, you know, this past week it was Liam Eichenberg was the one that, you know, could have played better. And even in his post-game interview, he said as much. And before that, Robert Jones had some of those. But I think that overall, they've been pretty good. You know, you obviously have those couple of plays here and there, and especially with Liam Eichenberg, because, you know, everybody just, you know, he had a really rough start to his career. And, you know, for whatever reason with him, you know, it's not that he loses so much more often than anybody else. It's just that when he loses, it's like really bad. And that, you know, sometimes like that gets blown out of proportion. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, other players have the same number of losses in a game, but they may not be as visible as what Eichenberg does. So, you know, when those are what's fresh in your mind, then of course it's, you know, Liam Eichenberg sucks. But when you go back and you look at it as a whole and track them from play to play, you know, sometimes you find that he really only had as many negative plays as, you know, an Aaron Brewer or, you know, an Austin Jackson, something like that.
You got to look at the batting average. For the biggest part of this offensive line, you lose Connor Williams. He signed with the Seahawks. And then Robert Hunt, 5-year, $100 million contract with the Carolina Panthers. That still blows my mind every time I say it. Has Austin Jackson's game looked any different without that 6'6", 330-pound mauler like Robert Hunt next to him on that left side of the offensive line? Right side, sorry.
Yeah, I don't think so. I felt like last year, I feel like Austin Jackson really got out to a hot start last year. He graded really well through probably the first 5 or 6 games last year. And then he kind of tailed off. And so when he got the extension and it wasn't, you know, a top of the market type extension, it made sense because he wasn't playing as a top of the market tackle. He's playing as a pretty good tackle. And that's kind of been what it's been so far early this season. He has graded pretty well. You know, Jackson, Brewer, and Armstead when he's in there. All three of those guys have graded highly for me, through these first 5 weeks. So I haven't felt like there's been a big drop off from Jackson losing Hunt beside him.
There's already some holes in this argument I'm about to say, but would you rather have someone like Austin Jackson, who might be like an 80 overall if we're going out of 100, but he's going to play 16, 17 games per season, or would you prefer like all-star 33-year-old Teron Armstead? And definitely no disrespect here, but if you can pencil in like, all right, it's just how his career has gone. He's going to miss 4 or 5 games. Which player would you pick personally? That guy who's going to be an all-star for 12 games or somebody you're going to have for 16 or 17?
I think a lot of that would depend on who the backup is. And that's, you know, I kind of like what the Dolphins have done at the left tackle position, because when Armstead is in there, he is, you know, elite, or at least borderline elite. And then you have Kendall Lamb, who has played solid in almost every opportunity that he's gotten. And then you have Patrick Paul kind of waiting in the wing. So I like what they have going there. So I don't necessarily have an issue with that, just because I feel like if Armstead were to lose extended time, you're not dropping way off. It's not like we're throwing Lester Cotton out there at left tackle to fill in for him if he's not in there. But as a general statement, you know, if we're not talking about a Teron Armstead that's, you know, playing at a elite level when he's in there, then generally I would go for the guy that I know is going to be in the lineup, because, you know, like you've heard me say, continuity is key, and especially in the, you know, this zone blocking scheme where these guys, you know, are trying to get into so many combination blocks and different variations of that, you know, having those guys side by side from week to week, you can definitely see a big difference, you know, when that happens versus when it doesn't.
I think most fans have issues with the interior of the offensive line, specifically at guard, but I really like what they did at offensive tackle, especially left tackle. It kind of seemed like you had Kendall Lamb as that short-term option, like early in the season, those first 4 weeks, and McDaniel proved me wrong here, but you think early in the season you'd let him go out there and do it. But what were your thoughts seeing Patrick Paul get thrown into the action on primetime?
Yeah, so I was all for that. Before this season, I would have let Teron Armstead, you know, ride off into the sunset. And my plan for left tackle would have been to draft somebody that maybe isn't the lock to start at left tackle, but somebody that could compete in there. And Patrick Paul fell into that bucket of tackles. And then to also have a veteran tackle so that if, you know, the rookie wasn't ready, you still had somebody there to do it. For me, the first time that Lamb came in was the Buffalo game, and he did not grade well at all in that game for me. The second time that he came in, he graded a good bit better. But it wasn't, you know, it's not like Lamb was playing well enough that I didn't want to see Patrick Paul. So I thought that it was a great opportunity to be able to see him, get him some, you know, in-season reps, because you don't know how many of those there's going to be, and especially once Tua comes back, like, you're going to be less likely to see them rolling the rookie out there. I was happy with them starting him that game, and I liked what I saw out of him in that game.
What's a thing or two you're really looking forward to seeing in this next quarter of the season or so as Tua gets back? I think one of the most underrated parts of this first quarter of the season was not having Raheem Mostert. I just think the attitude he brings, the personality, just on a snap-by-snap basis, was very undervalued. So when you think about the trenches, what are you really looking for?
So I was really impressed with the play calling this past week, and something that me and a lot of other fans have been asking for, more inside runs. You know, I think that McDaniel fell in love with that crack toss last year, and for good reason. I mean, Miami was really good at doing that. This year, it hasn't been as successful. We haven't had great blocking by the receivers, and the guys are asking to crack down. And same with the tight ends and with the outside zone. Durham Smythe was always, I felt he was always a little bit below average in that regard. And, you know, really expected Julian Hill to step up and be that inline tight end. And he's really flopped this year in that regard. So the outside zone, I didn't feel had been working well. This last game against the Patriots, they really committed to the inside zone, only ran, I think, maybe 4 or 5 outside zone plays where they're running to the tight end, only ran one crack toss and ran a whole bunch of inside zone, and, you know, really let the guys like, you know, the Rob Jones, the Austin Jacksons become those people movers that you need with the inside run scheme. And I felt like, you know, having Mostert in there, and, you know, he's, you know, been the angry runner, whatever that's called, a couple times now, and Jalen Wright is running really well, really physical. So excited about the, you know, seeing how that play calling continues to evolve, and also excited about the idea of Mostert and Jalen Wright being more of the running backs in this offense. And when Achan comes back, seeing him be more of that move position, F position player, where he's playing more of a slot receiver role, and obviously we'll still get some snaps from the halfback position.
That's music to my ears. There's nothing better, nothing I want more for Achan than that role where he's just that guy, get him out on the edges. I know this last injury wasn't from like a big defensive tackle landing on him, but, you know, if you can limit those hits, it's just, it's going to help him more in the long run.
Yeah, and I think that was where he was drafted to be. Like, I felt like, you know, I think that Ezukonma was kind of drafted in that F position type role that, you know, is a hybrid. I think that's what they wanted him to do, and obviously he's had some health issues. So when they drafted Achan, I felt like that was the role that they always envisioned for him. And then due to injuries early last year, he kind of got shoved into a more of a feature running back role, and obviously excelled at that. But I think that that's why they went and drafted a Jalen Wright as well, to try to, you know, move more in that direction again.
That's so interesting you say that. So Ezukonma and Devon Achane, completely different body types. What are the traits that you were looking for specifically when you look at that F position, why they both fit despite being different types of players?
So, I mean, the F position is kind of the extra player. Like, all of your formations are going to have your five offensive linemen, your quarterback, going to have a tight end almost always going to have two wide receivers, and always going to have one running back at least. So you've got one more skill player left. And in Miami's offense, it's what's called the F position. And when you look at, you know, what they do, that could either be, you know, Alec Ingold would be one that falls under that F position. If you bring out a third wide receiver, whether that's you know, Malik Washington or Odell Beckham, in their playbook, that's going to be a F position player. If you bring in, you know, an extra running back and you have 21 personnel, or while fast 21 is when they bring in the two halfbacks, that's all also the F position. So those guys are all learning a primary position, and then they're learning the F position. So when you know, heard the stuff about Ezukonma struggling to learn the playbook, I don't think it was that he was struggling to learn how to be a wide receiver. I think it was all the extra stuff that comes with the F position. So, you know, I think that what they would like to have out of that position is just basically somebody that's versatile. Even Janu Smith is the, you know, the second tight end a lot of times. You know, a lot of times he's the second tight end on the field, whether he's with Smythe or with Julian Hill. And, you know, they're lining up in the slot. We saw them lining up in the backfield. We heard them talk about the Janu Smith package. And I think that would be more of a F-type role with that package as well. So from a F position type player, you're really just looking for somebody that has that versatility to be able to line up in the slot, that has the ability to, you know, run reverse as a ball carrier, can line up in the backfield at times, you know, just somebody that has the versatility to line up multiple places and still have a primary position as well. I mean, as you saw with Achan, you know, when we need a running back, he's still able to do that.
At OL Coach Smith 63 on X on YouTube. Eric, this has been an absolute blast. The last question I have for you, if there's one thing I think we've hammered home, is that continuity is absolutely key. Two guys I really look at on this offensive line, and this could just be me being a homer, but Robert Jones in his fourth year with the Dolphins. Lester Cotton, this guy is 28 years old. It's his fifth year in the NFL. The Dolphins aren't at the point where they're just kind of cycling through the undrafted free agent rookies on the offensive line. You can separate those two guys if you want, especially with Robert Jones being a starter. But have you seen that gradual growth between guys like that, where it's somebody, it's in Butch Berry, we trust this offensive coaching staff, to really develop these guys and make them into starters after 3-4 years of really getting to work with them?
Yeah, I think we have. I mean, even when you look at an Austin Jackson, like before McDaniel got here, he was kind of viewed as a lost cause. And even in that first year, I think the first year of McDaniel, he only played a few snaps due to injury. But you can see the way that they've developed him. And he is really, even though he's not a premier tackle, he is the right type of tackle to have in this scheme. So I feel like that's a player that we've seen them develop. You know, Robert Jones, you know, in my grading, I didn't have him all that far behind Robert Hunt last year. Okay. So, you know, coming into the season, he was the player that I felt was going to be the one to step up, you know, in that race for the starting guard. So he's been a little disappointing early this year. He had a really good week this past week. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen going forward, because I did also feel that the shoulder injury that he had in week two may have affected him a little bit there as well when his grades really tanked down there. But yeah, he's a player that, you know, again, not a perfect player. He's a limited athlete, not great in space, but there's things that he does really well. And in the past, he's shown an ability to be, you know, quick in a short area. We're talking about those, you know, the cutoff blocks and stuff like that. Like, he's not going to chase somebody in the open field and catch them, but he's, you know, he's shown that foot quickness to be able to get his hips around and to seal those blocks. Lester Cotton, I can't explain why he's still on the roster, to be honest. Like, you know, the coaches must just love him. Like, and you know, that may come down to something as simple as he's the guy that, you know, when they need somebody just to plug in and play, you know, maybe he just, you know, mentally knows the scheme well enough, you know, understands the combination blocks and is able to help sustain the performance from that perspective. But I don't see him and Robert Jones necessarily in the same light that, you know, Lester Cotton, I don't see making those cutoff blocks, doesn't even have that short area quickness that I feel that Robert Jones does. But I do feel that, you know, as we move forward, you know, they obviously used a pretty high pick on Patrick Paul. Mm-hmm. You got the first round pick in Austin Jackson at right tackle. But the interior guys, I think that we're going to see them try to continue to develop, whether it's the Andrew Myers,
yep,
you know, developing into a starter next year, the year after that, things like that. I'm not expecting big money or big draft picks in the interior offensive line.
I completely agree with you there. I'm just like, there's a little bit of panic I have going on where a lot of coaching staffs don't get 3 years to kind of figure things out, right? It's 2 years. If things aren't moving in the right direction, you're gone. I mean, Lester Cotton being in his fifth year in the NFL, I mean, we saw just the struggles Skylar Thompson had, who we didn't need him to go out there and look like a starting quarterback. We just needed him to go out there and look like a backup quarterback, and he's kind of struggled to do that. So I think that's one of the growing fears. Like, I'm not ready to, you know, launch Mike McDaniel to the moon or anything like that, but one of those fears is like, there are some of these guys that I wonder if they're being kept around a little too long when you could try to go out and find someone and try to develop and use that time in a different way.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you know, but also, I don't know what the deal is with Isaiah Wynn. Yeah. He's obviously got a very extensive injury history, the same way that Armstead does. You know, they re-signed him this year, so they must have felt like he was going to play and didn't feel like they expected him to miss the start of the season the way that he has, right? So had that panned out, then Lester Cotton probably isn't even on the roster. So I don't think they necessarily came in expecting to continue to develop Lester Cotton. I think that was, again, you know, one of those deals that, you know, Isaiah Wynn not available, Jack Driscoll, you know, apparently didn't play as well as they had hoped that he would. And, you know, Lester Cotton's just the guy on the bottom of the roster that just kind of keeps hanging on.
Just those couple intangibles. Eric, I know I already said last question, but the final one, there was a lot of drama early in the season, preseason snapping issues, a lot of snapping issues, ball going over Tua's head. They were bringing in a bunch of different centers. How are you feeling about Aaron Brewer and the center position when you go from someone who, like Connor Williams for a year plus, looked like an absolute stud? You bring in someone from Tennessee who kind of bounced around the offensive line, but I mean, through five games, Aaron Brewer looks like a pretty solid center.
I was a big fan of that signing. When they made that signing, I went back and watched every snap of his from 2023. And like when you talk about an offensive lineman that you could literally make a highlight reel of his blocks, like that is Aaron Brewer. Like he is just a fun guy to watch, you know. And he, despite, you know, he's short, he's light, you know, he doesn't look like what you would expect an NFL offensive lineman to look like, but you know, he's also one of the most athletic, if not the most athletic center in the NFL now. And he finds a way to make that work. So I like that signing a lot. I think, you know, he's graded out well. I think he is a great fit for this system. There are still snap issues. You know, the obviously not as severe. We're not seeing the fumbles that we saw in the preseason, but that's another one of those things that when you watch it on a snap-to-snap basis and really go back and watch it, you see some of those snaps that are, you know, high and outside, or the quarterbacks are bending down for, you know, so there is still concern there that one of those could come back to bite us in the butt. But, you know, even though they haven't been perfect, you know, we haven't had the costly ones like we did with Connor Williams.
Eric, thank you so much for taking the time to join us for a bit here. This was an absolute blast. I hope we get to do it again soon. And most importantly, go enjoy the rest of your bye week. We don't got to worry about losing a football game.
For sure. For sure.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Eric.
Thank you.